begin sexing.
We are finishing up developing healthy relationships. How we help our children to develop healthy relationships.
And we are hopefully going to begin also today, it takes discipline to become a disciple.
Let's begin again with prayer. Bow our heads. Lord Jesus, show us how to have healthy relationships so that we can pass on this wonderful blessing with our children. Show us how the relationship that we have with you is the most important one, and how healthy relationships with others flow from our relationship with you. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Okay, last time we had gotten through the Bible passage section. We're on the back side of the first page of part 5. We're getting to that section where I give short, brief, but hopefully powerful hints on how to have healthy relationships and how to help our children to develop healthy relationships. It's entitled, It's All About Relationships on the bottom. The first bullet point there is parents with healthy relationships breed children with healthy relationships. Now, that was no pun intended, but I guess sort of it was. I don't want to give you the impression, though, that it's handed down in the genes, right? It's something that has to be developed. And I'm talking more there about nurturing it rather than having it by nature. Okay? Modeling, as we learned for several lessons now, is very important. For children to develop healthy relationships, they have to see healthy relationships, right? So parents with healthy relationships breed children with healthy relationships. Realize that when you are making up with a friend after you've been on the outs, that is a time where hopefully your children will be picking up from you some techniques about how to make up with a friend, right? Modeling is very important. That's why I added the next one too, the second bullet point. When we were taught how to counsel at the seminary, the teacher that we had that was brought in especially from a counseling organization, a counseling institution, to teach us how to counsel, this is one of the phrases he has said, and it has never left me. And it's for the guys. The best thing a father can do for his children is to love their mother. Let that sink in a little bit. So often we think that it's the child that we have to work on, right? But there's another critical person in the picture. Love your child's mother, and they will benefit from it. Do you remember a couple of times ago when we described this parenting thing as raising fruit? Where when you have the fruit tree, you don't work at the end of the branches. There's nothing you need to do at the end of the branches except prune once a year. But most of the time is spent on other things. On the ground around the base of the tree, right? You gotta feed the roots, and then the blessings come up through the branches, right? And that's how you produce good fruit. So in the same way, with children, it's not always a matter of working on your children. It means things like working on your marriage, right? In a class like this, we can't go in depth into having a good husband-wife relationship. But let me just encourage you to think about things like attending when we have marriage classes here. I think Board of Adult Discipleship is planning a marriage seminar, one of these weekend retreat type seminars coming up in the near future. Put it on your calendar as soon as it comes up. Take any of the classes that we have. I think last year, the small groups were zeroing in on that, right? I think all the small groups did husband-wife relationships, right? Get yourself into a class like that. Go to a counselor or a pastor just not even in times of crisis, but just to talk about things that you can do to foster good relationship with your spouse. That relationship is so important in the way that a child is raised. And notice, I don't zero in on the ladies here, because I think it's the men, we as men, that need to work on this the most, right? Love your wife, and your children will be blessed through it. She will be a happy person, and your children will be blessed as well. Okay, I'm going over the bullet points rather quickly today so that we can get to the next lesson, but I don't want to rush past anything. So please, at each bullet point, if you have some input, you have some questions, please stop me along the way. Okay. Top of the next page, teach by example. When driving, be courteous to other drivers. Use please and thank you in private as well as in public. Right? Sometimes we wonder why our kids are aggressive and we don't notice that they're picking it up from us, because we cut that guy off or we shout out in the car at the other driver and he can't hear us, who's the only one that hears that stuff. The kids in the car, right? So are we gaining anything by it? Some of you know that I bought a scooter recently, and I learned something yesterday, that people on two-wheel vehicles are birds of a feather that gather together. I was at a stoplight, and I saw in the two rearview mirrors two guys on their Harley Hogs, just dressed in leather, coming up alongside me, and I got a little bit nervous. And they had like masks on to keep themselves warm, but they looked like bandits, you know. And at first I thought, oh my goodness, you know, what are they going to do to me? They were the friendliest guys. They wanted to talk. Even at one point in the conversation, one of them said, and I couldn't hear it real clear at first, "We go to church." And I thought he was asking me if I went to church. So I said, "Yes, I go to church." No, we go to church. They are the type of people who are out in the open, and they want to interact with other people. And I thought, man, when we four-wheel drivers, when we get in our car, we have this, you know, keep the world out, and we're not, and we feel like we're in our tank, right? That we aggressively, you know, and those people have a whole different view of driving. They both had to shake my hand and ask what my name was, and they were the friendliest guys that there could be. Now, what the only reason I'm telling you this story is so that you transfer some of that goodwill into your car, and you recognize that the people around you are not your enemies, and they certainly are not people to be shouted at while your children are listening, so your children can pick up all kinds of bad habits about yelling at people that can't even hear them. You know how we've gotten into the habit of shouting things at the TV when the people in the TV can't hear, but our children sure pick up a lot of it, right? See the point I'm making? How are we modeling relationships in front of our children? Are we modeling dysfunctional relationships, and is that why they develop dysfunctional relationships? Michelle?
I can't help see this picture in my mind with you there at the stoplight. You just remind me of the cream filling in between the two black ones.
Why did they say they won't go to church?
I don't know. I had no irritation of church on me. As a matter of fact, I was telling the kids afterwards. Sam said, could you put a fish on the back of your scooter? So I said, it would have to be an awful small fish. I don't know why they were telling me, except that they were outgoing Christian people.
Maybe they want you to be scared, you know, when they get up next to me.
Were they Mormons on a mission?
By the time they asked me what church I went to, and by the time I could ask what church they went to, we had a green arrow already, and they had to drive off. But I'll come to the other one too. Please and thank you. Sometimes we just get so frustrated because those kids big enough, please and thank you.
Well, maybe it's because we're not using please and thank you. It's very easy to develop a double standard with that, right? Where you expect it of your children, but you don't use it yourself with them. And notice I put in private as well as in public.
I think sometimes we give them this sense of, well, when you're around strangers, then you better mind your P's and Q's. But when you get with the familiar people, then you can kind of, you know, trash on them. If we're giving that kind of signal, we're making a mistake too, right? P's and Q's at home as well. Those are the people that are closest to you.
Those are the relationships that are most important. So you want to be on your best behavior with them, right?
Okay, anything on that bullet point? Then second bullet on that page, speak well about all people. Do not air personal grievances, especially about your child's other parent or his or her teacher in front of your child.
I have to be frank with you, and I notice in our world more and more today, parents, mean-mouthing is the way we always used to talk about it in Peshtigo, mean-mouthing other people in front of their children, and I cringe every time I hear it. I don't know if I hear it so much about parents trashing the other parent in front of children, but I hear parents talk badly about teachers in front of their children. Big mistake. It teaches disrespect for people in authority. Be careful about those people who are closest to your children and talk about them in a proper way.
Anything on bullet number two? Then the third one on that page, make your children comfortable around other children by allowing them to mingle with other children regularly.
I don't fear anything like us, but we live in a rather old neighborhood.
Our houses were built in the 1960s. We have some people on our street who still own the home from the very first purchase of the home. And so there aren't a lot of children our kids' age on our street.
It's complicated by the fact that we also send them to St. Mark's so that, you know, they're not going to school with the neighborhood children, and they could kind of become not connected with other children. So we're trying to look for ways all the time to make sure that our children are interacting with other children.
I think it's very important. One of the cautions I'm going to be giving you at the end of this lesson too is please be careful not to be overprotective with your children.
When we were buying our house, Dorcas was looking specifically for a cul-de-sac because she grew up in a cul-de-sac. And there were a lot of kids that lived on the cul-de-sac, and they were constantly in the cul-de-sac. Now, we live in a world that has changed since the time that we grew up. We are more afraid of letting our children out into the front yard, into the street. We didn't find a cul-de-sac house, so we live on the street. And we hardly ever let our kids in the front yard. They can't go in the front yard unless we are there.
But we've got to be mindful then. Are we cutting them off from the community? Do they not know how to approach other children? Sometimes kids can be rather...
Now we have the extremes in our household where one is more quiet and to himself. I won't say any names, but quiet and to himself. And the other one is more outgoing and gregarious beyond her. So you need to take into account too the disposition of your child. You know, Maddie, you don't have to encourage as much, go play with other kids. But Sam, it's important for us to say, you know,
go spend time with other kids. It's important to interact with other kids. Anything on that bullet point? Jerry?
Well, I know that we've had the same problem. We never lived in the neighborhood with any children. Mm-hmm. In our old neighborhood, the children were there were my most desirable. Mm-hmm. But they did, you know, and interesting enough is Alex, well, we get the same thing that you have with your children.
That's right.
He's more outgoing and plays Little League and other sport activities, and he meets kids and he tells me, you know, they don't want to church. You know, they don't think God, they think I tried to talk to him about it, and I said, well, that's really nice of you, Alex. But, I mean, he doesn't interact well with that, but he notices right away, and we discussed, you can tell the difference in kids that aren't from good Christian families, and he knows it right away. They're not very Christian. They cuss me, and they're not very nice. So it's really interesting that our kids that go to school, maybe they are sheltered, but when they do get out there and meet other children, he can pick out right away kids that aren't very nice and not very good kids, and other kids that are really nice kids and have good morals and they're good backgrounds. So
yeah, excellent.
I think that's a good thing for our school as possible.
Yes, excellent. And last time, for those of you who weren't here last time, I emphasized that walking that fine line where you don't shelter your children so much that they're not exposed to children with bad manners, maybe unbelieving children, but that they want to go and reach out to them and recognize that they want to share this faith that they have with those children. So it's kind of a balancing act, you know, of not putting your child in harm's way, but not sheltering them so much that they're hesitant to go out into the world and be witnesses as Jesus has called them to do. Yeah. Gordon?
I was going to say, after 22 years of experience now, I've noticed that we can guide and encourage, much like God does with us, but the personality style of that child is going to be pretty much determining what their inner relationship is with other people.
Sure.
Jana, for example, has no enemies. Mm-hmm. Deborah was always more reserved and more quiet. You could always tell what Jana was thinking, and you had to pull it out of Deborah. Mm-hmm. Same with Nathan and Mark, even though they're from two different families. Mm-hmm. And Jana and Mark will go out and talk and socialize with people about God or anything else, whereas Nathan and Deborah tend to be more reserved about it.
Yeah.
And we, when Pam and I were together, we hovered, I would say, quite a bit over the girls, partly because they were girls and partly because it was the 80s and there was a lot more news coverage of all the molesters and things, like Carly and Sarasota last week. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you can't do anything about it. Sometimes you have to equip them. Jana had a guy stop on the street right in front of Juanita's house, right around the corner. And she and the Hatfield boys were out playing ball. And the guy stopped in the car and said, hey, have you guys seen a puppy? I lost my puppy. Classic child molester line. And they said, oh, you're a bad guy. Get out of here or something. Because we had said that's one of the things they
did. Yeah.
But Juanita was inside. And Bill and Linda. Bill was numb. Linda was inside. And the kids were out there by themselves.
Equipping them is an important thing, right?
Yeah.
Talk through these situations with your child, what the lines are that a child molester might use. Teach them how to respond or not to respond, you know, to instantly head toward the house, whatever, you know, the geography of where you live is going to determine the instructions that you give. And the other piece of advice that Gordon gives is good too, right? Each child is different, and no matter how much we might foster them and try to encourage them to be more outgoing, you're going to have to realize that nature has determined personality to a certain extent. And you're going to, if a child is somewhat reserved, you're going to want it to come out of their shell somewhat. But you're going to have to realize that you're working within a certain personality too, and not push them to where they have bad reactions to, you know, having to go out in public or be talkative or whatever it is that you'd like them. Good points. The fourth bullet point that, oh, Curtis had one?
I think there's another thing I'd like to talk about cultural, because most people, if they don't take their kids into another culture, once they grow up, college age, they don't have an acceptance for that other culture, and or they don't feel confident. So if your child isn't comfortable dealing with other cultures, then they become fearful. And then when they get older, they don't know what to do with it.
Exactly.
So I think when they're younger, you can use sports, but even in some sports, there's not other cultures there. So you kind of have to, you know, be inventive, and sometimes the parents have to get out of the box too.
Right. Exactly.
Because to go to other neighborhoods where you might not feel comfortable with, you know, that's what you have to do if you want your kid, because hey, in another 10 years, I see, you know, California is going to be, I'd say, kind of like Hawaii is. If you ever go to Hawaii, it was, everybody is all different cultures, and they all pretty seem to get along. And the mixture here is just going to get more and more that way. And I think, too, the parents have to kind of be careful, because if they don't address those issues, you know, sometimes they might say something about a certain culture, and they really don't mean it that way, but the kid takes it differently because they only have a limited understanding. And anyway, I think that's something good for us to think about.
Excellent point. In the bullet points, I've emphasized making sure your kids mingle with all the various age groups and stuff, but same way with the ethnic background of a person. Make sure to let your children mingle with people of many different ethnic backgrounds so that a fear doesn't develop. Be very careful about the things that you say about people of other ethnic backgrounds, because kids can kind of hone in on those words that may not be, you know, inappropriate words either, but they just have a certain connotation to them that the kids pick up on and begin to use those words themselves. And so Curtis's piece of advice is really good. The way you do that is by you as an adult mingling with people of the various races, right? And then your children will see that it's a natural thing, and it will become second nature to them. Yeah.
I know we move on, I just want to bring this up. My ex-husband's family, of course, are a totally different culture. They're Peruvian. They live a Peruvian life in America. So when the kids would go down there, I just hate it. They don't know about anything, and they watch stupid TV, and they have terrible food, and they do. And finally I just said, you know what? That is nothing wrong with what they do. That's their way of life, and you have to accept, you may not like what they eat, but you need to not just eat it, and because that's their way of doing it. And he learned how to accept their way of life. It was a little bit tough for him, and he's better now. I just said, you know, they live their life their way, and we live our life this way, but you have to be accepting when you go there to act their way and speak Spanish and listen to Spanish to me, maybe you'll pick something up or something, you know, learn how to
listen something.
And learn something, right? Yeah.
I mean, you can view something like a foreign language as bad or good, but I can remember the first time I was around somebody, growing up in Peshtigo, Wisconsin, let me tell you, everybody speaks English. Well, we took a trip once to Niagara Falls, and since it was in Canada, they had a bilingual tour guide on the bus who would say everything in English and then in French. And I can remember thinking, ooh, that French language is really exotic sounding. And I would see the kids on the bus speaking it. And my parents made some type of derogatory comment about, I forget what it was, how exactly they said it. But and it was even about the intelligence of those people speaking that foreign language. It was somehow drawing into question their intelligence. And I had the exact opposite reaction. It was my first exposure to people speaking a foreign language. And I viewed them as very intelligent, that they could speak something else. And, you know, prejudices usually get handed down through culture, I believe. It's not something that's inborn in a child. And if you give your child some kind of stereotype, they're going to pick up on it and they might accept it. But if you don't give any kind of indication of, you know, good, bad, because it's different, they are simply going to be much more willing to accept it as, oh, that's different. Isn't that interesting? And let their natural curiosity be aroused. Take them into those kind of settings. And they will ask questions, and then you have a chance to answer them and describe why there are different cultures, why there are different languages in the world, why there are different ethnic foods and things. I come from a background where I could have grown up completely in lily white America. I mean, everybody in our community was all German Lutheran. Not only were we all white, but we were all descended from the same nationality. My wife had the exact opposite. opposite situation growing up in Washington, D.C., where her friends were all of different ethnic backgrounds, and she's colorblind to that kind of stuff. And I, from being married to her, have kind of picked up that way of looking at things, but it didn't come natural, I would say, because of the place that I grew up in. But it was because I did specific things. I traveled abroad. I lived in Europe for a year. You get exposed to different things. And isn't that what you want for your children to have? Greater exposure to their world so that they can make more informed decisions about life, right? Exposing them to other cultures will do that. It will make them a better person. A more intelligent person. Excellent point. Let's go on to the fourth bullet point. I think this one is very important. Talk through conflict resolution immediately when you see your child, for instance, fighting with another child over a toy. Just stop whatever's going on and address the issue. You know that I'm only giving very simple pieces of advice, right? And one of my main pieces of advice that I've given over and over again is talk to your kids. Don't just banish them from the room when they're having a conflict with a kid. Talk about why did the conflict develop? Why do both of you want that particular toy? Help them to think through. Well, because it's the newest one, and so it's the funnest one. And then talk through, well, doesn't that make sense then that your friend also wants to use it? Now we have a conflict here. This is the newest toy, and both of you want to use it. How could we function in this room right now with this one toy and let them come up with the solution? And 9 chances out of 10, they're going to come up with a very simple solution like, well, one of us will use it for 2 minutes and then the other one will use it for the next 2 minutes, right? And they come up with their own solution rather than you imposing a solution on them, right? And these simple little situations can help them then to develop techniques for later in life for how do we get along at work when two of us share a computer monitor and, you know, we both want to use it at the same time or whatever it happens to be. Right? Talk at the moment of the conflict what the solution is, get them to come to an agreement, and then you use your guidance to see that the agreement is held. Michelle.
One little thing that I add to what you're doing is I say you need to come up with a solution that's a win-win for both of you.
Mm-hmm.
Because what used to be is, well, I get it. No, I get it. Yeah. And then there's a new thing going.
Because they're still in lying mode, right?
Right,
and we've got to get it to ours, right?
Right. So I just said, you know, I only want good solutions discussed here that's going to be a win-win for both of
good.
You.
Good way of saying it. Solution needs to be a win-win. Anyone else on conflict resolution and how it helps with relationships? Curtis?
I think that's why, one thing that kind of upsets me now is when all children have, when their activities, there's usually a referee or somebody in, power to make the decision. But when I was a kid, all the neighborhood kids would go to the playground. You guys, we would all determine what the rules are, and if things got kind of unbalanced, we'd fix it. But now, there's always an adult there, and the kids never have that chance to iron out these ideas of their own and bring out their leadership qualities, or just to be able to, hey, what's really fair here? Because even a rule can be bent pretty far, and if the dominant person wants to bend the rules, some of the other kids would just go for it, and the parent might go for it too. That's not necessarily right. So that's where we get all these conflicts with the parents coming out of the stands or whatever. And the kids don't have enough opportunities to just make the rules themselves and live by them.
Does just neighborhood baseball work better than Little League? In that the kids have to set the parameters themselves rather than looking to the authority figure to make the decision for them. Okay, going on with the next one. Bullet point number 5 on that page. Make your children comfortable talking with adults by putting them in social situations with adults. Insist that your child greet adults, look them in the eye when talking to them, and use good manners when talking. to them. I think this one is very important. I've said before that I believe marketing has separated the generations and caused us to think that kids only want to be with kids, and adults want to be with adults, and seniors want to be with seniors. That's not the way it is in nature, and we need to get more integrated age-wise. I grew up, I shared with you before, in a three-generation household. My grandma lived in our house, and we were constantly interacting, all three generations. Whenever we were very social, my uncles and aunts would come regularly. There wasn't a week that went by where somebody didn't come to visit from in the neighborhood. And we would do things. I especially would want to be with the adults. I was the oldest of the four kids, and would want to play cards with the adults, interact. My parents fostered that, and as a result, I think it has helped me in the ministry that I interact better with various age groups. Let your children interact with adults. You'll be surprised sometimes how they would rather spend time with you than with people their own age, and foster that sort of thing. I was saying the thing about the grandparents last time too. That might even be one of our bullet points. Find a foster grandparent for your children if you live far away from grandpa and grandma, so that they are used to interacting. And I would say it's really pretty simple and a pretty direct thing that you have to do. If an adult greets your child and they don't respond, you simply stop and you say, "Mr. So-and-so said hi to you. Please say hi back." And simply make them do it until they get in the habit of doing it. I don't know if you've noticed with Mr. Holman, I think he's the master at this, but he purposely talks to kids for that reason. He will say, if there's a kid that greets him automatically, there's a well-adjusted kid. He purposely does that so that kids get in the habit of interacting with adults on a regular basis. Any questions or comments on that one? Susan.
I have a little comment. Last week, I was off for 3 days. I took Laura to Santa Cruz to visit this 90-year-old lady who's had her 90th birthday. She's been kind of my second grandmother.
Oh.
And she hasn't seen Laura since she's been 3 years old. So it was really interesting that I observed at first, there was a little distance, like she didn't really know her, and that's normal, I think. But one night when we visited her on state, she invited us overnight, and Aunt Dot and I were just having so much fun telling stories about what happened, me growing up with her and our interactions, like when we were at Bruce Castle and how the skunk sprayed our car one night going up to her house. And Laura was just, I've never seen her, so just in awe, and she was so quiet, and I kept looking, and she was sitting there listening, she was listening to the stories. And I remember, I just thought, there's so much to learn from that. And she's always asked me, "Mom, can you tell me another story?" So I think, you can pass down a lot of really important heritage things.
Yes.
Or just personal things.
Yes.
About your life. And she's at an age now where she likes to listen, I suppose, more than when she was younger. But mm-hmm. That was a really neat experience.
Excellent. Yeah, that's the kind of situations to foster with your child. And let me piggyback on what Susan is saying. I am noticing this more and more on my children, that they miss storytelling. Now, my kids are 8, and Sam's going to be 11 next month, and you wouldn't think that they are in the stage where they want to hear stories. Not a week goes by that at the supper table, they don't say, out of the blue, "Tell us a story, Dad." And it's usually some story about when they were little, when they were born, or something from my background. And it's not a very exciting story. I don't think I've ever told them an exciting story. I mean, it's the mundane, maybe something that happened on the farm when I was growing up, or whatever it happens to be. But they're just all ears for those things. And I mean, my kids like video games. It has to be fast-paced, And I, as a parent, might withdraw into my shell and say, "Well, I don't have much to offer them at this stage." But they hunger for it. So tell them stories like that. Some story about their heritage, Susan said. It's a way that you pass your heritage on to your children. I think I saw a couple of hands. Brett?
Well, you bring up another good point. My uncle was the greatest storyteller, and his oldest son follows right in his footsteps. He can talk about the silliest thing. Mm-hmm. He's a mortician. But he tells stories about his stays in mortician school in San Francisco, and you're just saying, tell us another one.
Really?
But going back to interacting with adults and all of that, don't you think, too, that our interaction with other children, when we're kids are by our side, tells them something, too?
Yeah.
Imagine Mr. Holman with Chris by his side. He's talking to all these other kids, and here Adam and Chris grow up, and they're very comfortable around adults.
Yes.
You know, and it's a natural thing. It's almost like, who's going to greet you first as you're walking towards someone?
Yeah.
Instead of, oh, I better not.
Yeah. Well, yeah, is he going to say hi to me? Exactly. Yeah. That in itself is modeling, right? I think most of you know Adam and Chris, and they are from the day I met those kids, they could talk with adults as if they were an adult, right? And it was probably because Jim was constantly walking up to children and saying, and they just picked that up, that you talk across the generations, right? So Brett's advice is good advice. If you want your kids to interact well with adults, then interact well with kids, right? Start talking to their friends as if they matter. Don't we sometimes send the opposite signals to kids? Well, I'm too busy for you. Yeah. I'm in the adult world. Don't bother me, kids. Jenny.
Friday night, Noel and I, now we have a child in high school, you know, our life has changed. But we chaperoned at the winter formal, and we had a blast. And then Friday night, they have a little Valentine's dance, and we're in there, and Morgan School, junior high, had a dance too, and they needed more chaperones, so Noel went, and then I took the younger girls to Denny's up our way, that's the only place that's open. And then we got back, and the dance still was over, so I went up and asked if I could bring the girls in and stuff, and we did. And I told Noel, I said, these kids do not know how to dance. I mean, it's sad.
So they all go,
And you know what? They all lined up. They wanted to know how to spin. It just set off a frenzy.
I didn't realize, Noel, you were that light on your feet. She's getting past the embarrassment of parents. That's an excellent point. Here's a contrast of my wife and myself again. She grew up in an urban culture where when you celebrate a wedding, you only invite adults to a wedding. I grew up in the country where weddings were the social event of the season that everybody from 1 week through 99 attended. And the kids were out on the dance floor as usually the kids started it because they just couldn't wait till the music started, and it took a while for the adults to warm up to going out to. But those are little cultural things that get handed down simply by exemplary, by modeling. This is what you do when you're happy. Okay? And you don't get to high school not knowing how to dance, right? So again, look for these cross-generational things that can be enjoyed, because a lot of times that's what kids eat up, and they're being so sheltered from it today that they don't understand it. Excellent point. Let's go on to the next one, although I think that's the foster grandparents one, right? I've already made a point about that several times. Let's go down to the third last bullet point. Talk to your children about the importance of good relationships. Start with the golden rule, do to others as you would have them do to you. And as they grow up, show them how good interpersonal relationships bring joy to living. Notice how I put that one with the first word in italics. If there's anything I want to emphasize to you guys, talk to your children. don't let an age come where it seems like they're clamming up. Make you clam up. Keep talking to them. Talk. Talk to them about good relationships. When they're little, it's going to have to be on pretty simple terms. When they're still in the mind mold, you've got to talk them into seeing, but this other child has needs and wants and joys too that are just as valid as yours. Treat them the way you would like to be treated. But as they grow up, don't let it with just that law message, because that's really a law message, right? Bring up the relationship with Jesus Christ. What Jesus has done for you, and now how you have the opportunity to show that kind of unselfish love to the children around you. It goes right into the next one. Second last one. Above all, talk about the good relationship that God has established between himself and your child through his Son, Jesus Christ. And this is more than just a, what would Jesus do in this situation? That's become a very popular saying in American Christianity in the last decade or so. What would Jesus do in this situation? But I don't think that most people realize that is a law-oriented message. You better do what Jesus does, or otherwise you don't quite measure up, is what's implied behind it. What I'm talking about here is, look how wonderful Jesus has been to you. Now, reflect that love to others. That has more of a gospel emphasis to it than what would Jesus do. Gordon.
You mentioned a while ago a few points that I just wanted to comment on. The marketing having separated different age groups, a lot of that maybe just the media types nowadays and the different delivery methods, the different generations getting together and sharing stories and dances and social events, and then God having the perspective, that's what I wanted to bring up. He's omnipresent. He's got the advantage of having been there forever. And that's one of the things that young people don't get when they're not around younger people and older people and different generations. Mm-hmm. I even see it in the system world. We've got young folks working on computers that have just a quick, right now, internet perspective. They don't realize that when they make a change, there's a whole ripple effect that they have to take into account. So it's in all areas of life, that long-term perspective is very important.
Excellent point. Did everybody grasp Gordon's point there? Could you hear him? He said, our world is so segmented, and we cut ourselves off from the wisdom of the other generations, right? If we only hang around with the 20-somethings, we will all go in this direction and not realize that our behavior has ripple effects for the other generations. But then he brought into focus beautifully, well, who is the most experienced and wise one of all? God, because he is all-knowing. He is eternal. He is omnipresent. So what he has to offer is the very best wisdom that anyone could pipe into, right? And it comes all through his word. It comes through being connected with the community of God's word, which we call the church, right? And he brings up an excellent point that we need to all see clearly. How does God and church fit into our lives and our children's lives? I grew up in a much simpler lifestyle than here in Northern California. Let me tell you, God was the center of our community. There were no commercial buildings at all in our community because we were all farmers. But the church, they picked out the highest hill and they built an 80-foot steeple on it so that wherever you were, you could see that church. And an hour before church started, the bell would be ringing so everybody knew, now it's Sunday morning, we start our week here. And it was just the hub of our community. In today's fast-paced world, that can get lost very easily unless parents are very conscious of that. God is the beginning of it all. He is the beginning and he's the end. He runs through everything in our life. Every little conflict that we have during the day, he has the solution to it. And we have to tap into that, right? That's exactly what I'm trying to say here with the second last bullet point. Recognize that the most important relationship is the relationship with God. That is the only perfect one, because God is the only perfect person you will ever interact with. And He has done marvelously by you. He has given you everything as a gift of His grace. And that's the motivation now why you want to get along well with your second grade classmate, or with your teacher, or with whoever it happens to be, right? Because God is the center of it all. Jerry.
That's interesting. You said, you know, when you grew up, your whole center of your community was around church.
It was.
Lynn Black made a really big statement coming from Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. She says, we make it crazy in this town, in California, we're in California, and I'm from California forever. And it's true, you don't run across outside of our people in here that people really go to church that much. And she has encountered that. And I remember growing up, and I'm from far northern California, I can name on one hand the families that we knew that went to church.
Really?
You know, one of them. There is very, you just don't see that.
Mm-hmm. Not true at all, Northern California.
No,
I grew up in Chico, and all the people
yeah.
we knew attended the church.
We're
Christian, huh?
All the people we knew. I'm just talking about things. You go to high school, and I knew about everyone in the high school,
yeah.
and there wasn't very many. It's really, and she made that statement. I said, well, it's not really true, but you're probably right. There's not as many people. Church is not important to them, if you, you know, as important. Maybe.
Well, there's mm-hmm. so many different denominations that you can't.
Yeah.
Like, it was not right. Lutheran, I guess.
But I'll go back to my story about the easy rider who drove up next to me. One of the first things he wanted to tell me is that he went to church. And I even said to Dorcas, the choice of phrase. I mean, you will hear evangelical Christians today say something like, I believe in Jesus, or I've made my decision for Christ that's usually the way they start out. But what was intriguing to me about this guy is that the first way he brought it up is, I go to church. That's the way I grew up bringing it up. Because Lutherans aren't the type who, you know, because we don't believe in decision theology, that it comes down to my decision for Christ or something like that. So we would start with that exact phrase. And that there was a guy in Northern California riding on his motorbike who thought the church was important. That gives me some hope. That in an area, in a highly stressful, fast-paced urban area like we live in, the church can be the most important thing too. And what I'm saying to you guys is, reflect that to your children. Come on a regular basis. Make Sunday morning the most important hour of the week and say to your children, this is what it's all about. This is my best relationship. I want to start the week with a person I love the most. I want to go to his house. And that kind of thinking will be contagious with your children. Yeah. Okay, our last bullet point in this section says, avoid the two extremes, and I put an exclamation point in there, overprotective parenting and permissive parenting. The tricky thing about parenting is it always seems like you're walking that fine line and you're almost always going off either this cliff or that cliff. And how do I know exactly where the line is? Well, here are two of the cliffs that we walk between. Overprotective parenting. Mr. Holman has a phrase for parents who are too protective. He calls them helicopters. They've got their little whirly birds out there watching over the little junior, you know, make sure nothing happens to him. And usually the helicopters are the last people to recognize that they are helicopters. They think that they are stealth bombers, and they are going to get rid of that enemy who's going to hurt their little, but they're, and everybody around them can see that they are helicopters. My advice, if you think you might be a helicopter, is find that friend who you really can confide in and ask, am I being overprotective? Because 9 chances out of 10, if that friend is a true friend, they are going to tell you objectively, you've got a problem in this area. Watch out for overprotective parenting. But obviously the other one is just as dangerous, if not more, permissive parenting, and we see it all around us today, right? The fact that you're in a class like this, I think, in most cases would say you are not a permissive parent. I think the danger probably is greater to be the other, right? So avoid the two extremes. Okay, and then our where the rubber meets the road. The first one is your son is becoming disrespectful, and it's becoming more and more clear that he is especially talking down to girls. How do you begin to look for causes, and how do you address the problem?
Have you ever been around kids, tends to be boys, right, that are disrespectful around females? Pam?
Maybe it comes from his father being disrespectful.
Could be. Yeah, that's often a cause of it, that the father speaks disrespectfully to the mother. What could be another cause of it?
I think the last television show is put the men down.
Put the men down?
Like, knowing themselves is smarter than.
I never thought of that. And then a little boy might perceive, well, the female character is the one who's my antagonist, right? Because she's smarter or she's put on a pedestal and stuff. I hadn't thought of that.
Well, you look at the Carl's Jr. commercial. I mean, there's no way I'm going to be sitting at a counter eating a meal and have some idiot spraying the counter to clean it. We're going to have a problem right away. Or, you know, the guys sitting there eating a Carl's Jr. hamburger, and, you know, their mantra is, you know, don't bother me, I'm sitting here eating. Mm. But this other guy is, like, spraying the counter all around him with this, presumably, cleaning spray, mm-hmm. and, you know, the guy's kind of going like this, but he's going to stay there and eat no matter what. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm thinking, no, you know, get out of here, don't clean the counter. They're portraying these men in all Carl's Jr. commercials.
Yeah.
Or the KFC wings, you know, the guy sitting there with the food all over his face. And it's idiots. And I talked to Pastor Waterstrap about it, and he said that's one of the problems now, is that society tends to want to dumb down the male and their role in society. The other thing that I've noticed as the girls grew up, and their friends, boys, girls, all cultures and stuff. And the point was made about mixing. Mm-hmm. I noticed in elementary school, the kids, you know, Asian, Black, Hispanic, they all just play together and have a great time. And as they get older, you tend
they start
to
sorting out
separations. But on this one, at certain ages, the boys will start kind of teasing and even hitting mm-hmm. and doing that. Just to pay attention to the girls. It may not mm-hmm. be
yeah.
it may not be meant to be real negative. Mm-hmm. That may be their way of starting to communicate with them differently.
And age isn't given in this hypothetical situation, but I think you could read between the lines to see, is this the age where the boys are starting to band together, maybe talk about girls in a certain way, and they begin to pick up bad habits from their classmates, right? Mm-hmm. So those would be two sources of it, right? Maybe from at home, the way dad treats mom, or from the peer group where the boys are not treating girls properly. Anybody have another cause of the problem?
Let's say if you're raised with treating girls or women with respect, but then you go to school and maybe you open the door for one of your classmate girls and she looks at you like, what are you doing that for?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So then guys don't know. So then they go, well, you know, if I do this, I might get yelled at. If I don't do this, I get yelled at. What, you know, like when I'm on the bus, if there's a lady on the bus, should I give up my seat? You know, she might jump on me or she might go, oh, that's good. But you don't know that. Mm-hmm. And if you're a high school kid or junior high kid, you're going to go, well, I'm not going to put myself in that situation. I'm going to look like a fool in front of my friends, so I'll just sit here and do it, you know. But I agree with Gordon on those commercials, because 21st century commercials, they have one with a Hispanic guy, and then they have it with an Asian guy, and they, in both commercials, they make the guy look like He's clueless.
Yeah.
Really. And that the women's making the decision. So I think when boys see that, they transfer that in their, it gets in their subconscious to where they're weak. Mm-hmm. And when in Davis, you know, since our business was in Davis, I used to talk to the high school nurse. So she said, in high school, girls ask the boys out now. It's like when they go to the prom or some of the big dances, the boys, they just sit by, they just sit there. They don't think. And the girls are doing the calling, you know what I mean? That's the way it goes now. And how did that get to that point, you know?
Curtis brings up a thought in my mind. I wasn't intending to discuss it today, but does anybody else perceive this happening in our society today, where there is an older standard of boys being, that they should be more polite to girls, holding the door, that sort of thing, but that there's also another culture existing at the same time where girls are actually saying, no, that makes me look not, you know, capable of taking care of myself, and so I don't want you to do that. Does anybody else perceive those two? I'm perceiving that more and more in today's world, that there's this old-fashioned culture of you should have manners, but then when they reach a certain age, it clashes with a newer way of looking at the world that says, no, treat women equally and don't be polite to them. Treat them like you would the boys. I think that's a conflict. I forget who had their hand up first, but was it Craig?
Oh, I don't know.
Go ahead.
I've been doing a lot of crafting lately, and just observing, and I haven't traveled for some time, just making some short business trips, but it's just amazing how society in general, you know, as far as opening doors, or everybody's really out for themselves at the airport. And yeah. Oh my goodness, you step in front of me or you do anything mm-hmm. to get in my way, whether yeah. it's male or female. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, in general, society has kind of lost some of that mm-hmm. politeness.
Aren't manners important for relationships? And manners are hardly taught anymore today. Is it wonder we don't have good relationships?
Well, for driving. Mm-hmm. I got the 6,000-pound beast going 70 miles an hour down the freeway, and somebody in a little 2,000-pound car thinks I can stop on a dime, and, you know, I politely, you know, let them in. I don't wave or anything, but if they choose to put their life in danger by squeezing between me and the semi that's, you know, 100 yards ahead, you know, come on, it's, you know, there's a good enough spot there for you, but you're dead meat. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's back to choice.
Did you have anything else, Greg?
The other thing was that I think you have to, with all the bombardment of this type of behavior, I think you really have to have an open communication with your son or daughter on how you would like them to act in those situations.
Yes, mm-hmm. Because as your children grow up, they develop relationships with more and more people, and what Craig is saying, you need to make sure that the line of communication is always open between the two of you, because it's a much more important relationship, right, than the relationship with their classmates or with, you know, whoever. Those might be important relationships, but you still, as the parent, have the greatest wisdom to impart to them at that age, teaching them things like manners, like how do you treat a lady, how do you, you know, yeah. Carl had his hand up.
I was just going to say, the phrase that I learned in high school was, if something ever like that happened to me, I would respond, I'm not holding the door for you because you're a lady. I'm holding the door for you because I'm a gentleman.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the other thing is, be willing to hold the door for a man, too.
Yeah,
it's
for anyone.
Common courtesy.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Elders.
Elders, right? Older people. Jerry?
One thing I think about is, if people on TV, the name of the Grammy Awards and the Academy Awards, if you watch anything on TV or look around, there's always a man standing there. Look at the boys, how they're dressed. Mm-hmm. I mean, one time I was in this trip with my boss in Reno, and there was a big thing going on, big bands, or the hill. And we're sitting there, and he was checking out all the young ladies, and I'm like, he goes, what do you think? And I'm like, well, the girls are cute. There's not one good-looking guy. And he goes, well, I haven't seen anybody that I would look at. There's not one sitting there. Because of the way they dress, and it's taking men down. They just don't have any manners. They don't care. They don't care how they dress.
Yeah.
Their pants, they look like thugs. I mean, the way they dress,
yeah.
is how they dressed in prisons, and now the kids are dressing that for boys. Mm-hmm. But it just is amazing. I was saying, in Bella Vista High School, not one male holds an office. President, vice president, the treasurer, the secretary, all girls. There is no guys.
You're talking about the student government?
Student government, okay. One male mm-hmm. in Bella Vista High School.
Yeah.
And as you walk around and you look at the kids coming out, most of the kids, I'm not going to say all, but a large percentage are the sloppiest, but the kids, the boys. Mm-hmm. If the girls, you know, they care what they look like, they care how, you know, how they dress, but I mean, they're nicer. It's just coming down to what you're talking about. It's pretty sad.
Yeah. Just little things like how is a person dressed says a lot about their attitude for the thing. I've been surprised, I have to say, in the time that I've moved here, how I have seen kids want to dress up in tie when they have a basketball game, but don't want to wear one to church. And I've had this discussion even with parents. You can say what you want about it. You're dressed up as a top with a tie for the basketball game because you say this basketball game is important. Well, then why aren't you saying that about church? I try to compliment when I see the boys in church with tie hanging out today, and I complimented them right away because the way we dress says this is important. Jerry puts her finger on another thing too. If we want to foster men, boys taking leadership in their family, then we've got to foster it in places like the school so you don't get this flip-flop that's happening in many places in our society where the women are actually taking the leadership because the men are just renouncing their role of leadership, right? And we've got to reverse that trend.
The lack of leadership in the school is not it's not first. It's the home that's first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The boys at the school are sitting back and letting the woman take the lead.
Yeah.
Because they're not seeing an example of the man being the head of the household.
Exactly.
In a biblical way. Not the boss, but
exactly. It goes back to what Craig was saying before. I have to keep my line of communication open with my son. He's probably thinking of, you know, of Craig. You know, it's getting to be that stage because he needs to be modeling to his son what it's like to be a Christian father, a Christian leader, and then that's going to spill over into places like the school if it's reinforced in the home, right? Exactly. Okay, our time is up for today. So we will begin, next time you can take along part 6. We will finish up the rest.